Welcome to episode 1449 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. We are in the midst of a series on the life and times of the apostles, continuing this week with a focus on the Apostle Peter. In our last episode, Peter watched the Lord of Glory kneel before his disciples with a basin and a towel, teaching that true greatness is found in humble service. Today, we come to Peter's darkest night, a night of fear, failure, and bitter regret, when the disciple who vowed he would die for Jesus discovers how fragile his own courage really is.
I have never told this part easily, not because the memory is vague. It is the opposite of vague. Every detail is there: the cold of the courtyard, the smell of the fire, the face of the girl, the sound that came just after the third time I spoke. 60 years have not softened any of it. If anything, the years have made it sharper. The thing you most regret has a way of staying perfectly preserved. I tell it now because it has to be told. Because the story of what God can do with a broken man is not credible without first understanding how completely the man was broken. Let me go back to Gethsemane.
My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.
He took us across the Kidron Valley to a garden called Gethsemane. A place we had been before, many times. A place he apparently loved. He asked most of us to wait near the entrance. He took James and John and me further in. I had never seen him like that. Even on the lake in the storm, even facing the crowds who wanted to make him king by force, there had always been something in him that stood outside the situation. Some settled quality that nothing quite reached. In the garden, it was gone. He was distressed. He was troubled. He asked us to stay awake and watch with him, and then he went further in, alone, and prayed. I fell asleep. 3 times he came back. 3 times he found us sleeping. I have tried to explain this to myself over the years. The hour was late, the week had been exhausting, the emotional weight of the evening was enormous, and none of it is sufficient. He asked one thing of us in his darkest hour. We could not give it. When the torches appeared at the garden entrance, we woke up quickly enough. I drew a sword. I am not proud of what I did with it. I swung at the high priest's servant and cut off his ear. And Jesus touched the man and healed him and told me to put the sword away. Even then, even in the moment of his arrest, he was healing the damage I caused. I have thought about that many times.
Am I leading a rebellion that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I was with you, teaching in the temple courts, and you did not arrest me. But the scriptures must be fulfilled.
Then they took him, and we all fled, all of us, into the dark, every one. I came back. I want to say that was courage. Looking back, I think it was something more complicated than courage. Part loyalty, part inability to simply walk away from whatever was happening to him, part the lingering echo of my promise from the upper room. I will lay down my life for you. I could not quite let go of those words. John had a connection to the high priest's household and had gotten us inside the gate. I stood at the courtyard fire with the servants and the guards, warming my hands, trying to look like someone who belonged there and was not terrified. A servant girl looked at me across the fire.
Hey, you also were with that Nazarene Jesus, weren't you?
Such a small question. Such an ordinary voice. Not an interrogator, not a soldier. A servant girl, noticing a face she thought she recognized. I don't know what you're talking about. The words were out before I had decided to say them. Not calculated, not a plan, just reflex. Fear wearing the mask of ignorance. I moved away from the fire toward the gateway. Another servant girl saw me there.
This man was with Jesus of Nazareth.
And I denied it again, with an oath this time. I swore I did not know the man. An oath. I, who had confessed him as the Son of the living God at Caesarea Philippi. I, who had said I will lay down my life for you not 3 hours earlier. I stood in the courtyard of the high priest and swore on my life that I did not know Jesus of Nazareth. About an hour passed. I had drifted back toward the fire. The cold was real, whatever else was not. And someone else spoke up. A man this time. He had heard my voice.
Surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away. You are a Galilean.
My accent. The thing that had marked me as Am Ha'aretz my whole life. The Galilean roughness that the men of Jerusalem looked down on. Now it was marking me as his. And I began to call down curses on myself. I swore, I do not know this man. Immediately, a rooster crowed. And at that moment, I do not know how, through a doorway, across the courtyard, through whatever geometry of that terrible night made it possible, Jesus turned and looked at me. He did not say anything. He just looked. And I remembered the words he had spoken in the upper room. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. I had not believed him. I had argued with his prediction, loudly, in front of all the others. Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. Never. I went outside and wept bitterly. That is how Luke puts it. Bitterly. It is the right word. Not the weeping of grief exactly, though grief was part of it. The weeping of a man who has discovered something about himself he cannot unknow. A man who has looked into the mirror of his own worst moment and seen his face clearly, not as he wished to be, not as he presented himself, but as he actually was when everything was stripped away. A coward. A liar. A man who swore on his life that he did not know the person he loved most in the world. And then, in the hours that followed, I heard what was happening to him. The beatings, the trial, the sentence, Golgotha, the cross. I was not there. I could not make myself go. The same fear that had spoken in the courtyard held me back from the hill. I have asked myself many times what would have happened if I had gone. If I had stood at the foot of the cross, whether it would have mattered to him or changed anything for me. I do not know. I only know I did not go. And the weight of that did not lift for 3 days. I want to say something to anyone who has ever failed at the moment that mattered most. Who has looked back at a choice and been unable to understand how they made it. Who has discovered that the person they thought they were and the person they actually were in the crisis were not the same person. This is not the end of the story. I know that now. I did not know it in those 3 days. In those 3 days, the story felt completely over. Not just his story, but mine. What use is a rock that crumbles? What use is a foundation that gives way the first time real weight is placed on it? What could possibly be built on what I had shown myself to be in that courtyard? But God, it turns out, is not in the business of discarding broken things. He is in the business of rebuilding them, carefully, with more patience than the broken thing deserves. I did not know that yet. I was still outside in the dark, weeping. But the rooster had crowed, and somewhere on the other side of those 3 days, something was already being prepared for me. A charcoal fire, a shore, a question asked 3 times.
Most of us know what it is like to fail in a moment that matters. We make promises we intend to keep, only to discover that fear, weakness, or self-preservation can be stronger than we imagined. Peter's story reminds us that our worst failure does not have the final word. The same Jesus who predicted Peter's denial also prepared his restoration. God's grace is not reserved for those who never fall. It is extended to those who fall and discover that Christ remains faithful even when they are not. If you find yourself weeping outside your own courtyard of regret, remember this. The rooster's crow was not the end of Peter's story, and it is not the end of yours. To be continued.